this is a bit unusual. Most of these transfers go through usually without this kind of scrutiny.
Controversy over a liquor license transfer in Anchorage. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, bright aftermarket headlights prompt complaints from motorists.
The light is designed for the maximum output for the individual behind the wheel. You have to run a happy medium there of your ability to see versus what you're causing to other vehicles and around you.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Attorney General Craig Richards is in the process of hiring a special investigator to look into the handling of sexual assault complaints within the Alaska National Guard. Grace Jang, a spokeswoman for Governor Bill Walker, said Richards is vetting five candidates who have strong criminal investigation backgrounds and are in good standing with the Alaska Bar. She did not have a set timeline for the hiring, but expected it to be soon. She said the person selected will be more of a fact finder and recommend whether a special prosecutor is needed. Jang said the special investigator will be charged with looking into allegations of sexual abuse, harassment, and cover-up, as well as whether the response of law enforcement was appropriate and procedures were followed. A new Congress begins tomorrow, and that means former DNR Commissioner Dan Sullivan will be sworn in as Alaska's 8th U.S. Senator since statehood. Sullivan spokesman Mike Anderson says guests for the event include Sullivan's family, Governor Bill Walker, and several state legislators. On the other side of the U.S. Capitol, the entire House of Representatives is to be sworn in tomorrow, but Alaska Congressman Don Young won't be present, says spokesman Matt Shukaro.
Yeah, unfortunately, the congressman, his older brother, just recently passed away. It was something that was, you know, unexpected and very sudden. We are saddened to hear that news. And unfortunately, the congressman will be absent this first week of the new Congress.
84-year-old Russell Young of Meridian, California, died a few days ago after a brief illness, Young's office says. The congressman lost a younger brother in 2010. Shukaro says Young will take the oath of office next week, likely on Monday.
I think the Alaskans understand that he's dealing with a personal family matter, and he's excited to return here next week and to be sworn in and to get back working on the issues that are of concern to Alaskans.
Young will miss the vote selecting the Speaker of the House. Republican John Boehner is expected to retain the gavel in what could be a close vote. Some of the more conservative Republicans have turned against Boehner, primarily for not fighting harder against President Obama on immigration. Shukaro says Young would support Boehner over the other names that have surfaced as potential rivals. With the Republican takeover of the Senate, Alaska Senior Senator Lisa Murkowski becomes chair of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. She'll immediately be in the national spotlight because the Republican leadership has decided the first bill it will take up is the Keystone XL pipeline. Murkowski has scheduled a hearing on the bill in her committee on Wednesday, and as chairman, she'll manage the debate on the Senate floor. Alcohol and late-night clubs are often blamed for the frequency of bar break violence in downtown Anchorage. The last few months have seen shootings, fights, and even a massive street dance party that was cleared by police officers in riot gear. As KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, the Anchorage Assembly is casting an unusual amount of scrutiny on a pending liquor license transfer.
The LED Lounge hasn't officially opened, and when I stop in to talk to owner Robert Alexander, there's construction debris and a few workmen installing swanky decor.
You know, I think we have one of the largest, if not the largest, kitchen in the state of Alaska.
Alexander shows off a huge menu covered in small print for the Italian, Chinese, and Southern food he plans to serve out of the half-finished industrial kitchen in the back of the building he rents downtown. The menu is for the restaurant side of the business, Tri-Grill, but the other half of the space is for the LED lounge, consisting, so far, of a bar, a small dance floor, and lots of glowing LED lights built into the tables and walls. That's the side that's led to a series of procedural snags in the Anchorage assembly. Plans have been on hold since Assemblymember Patrick Flynn blocked the transfer of a liquor license. The building on West 6th Avenue used to house Platinum Jack's, a nightclub with a reputation as a bad operator in the neighborhood. It closed last summer, and now a group of property and business owners in the area think that the LED lounge will bring the same problems. At the heart of the matter is what kind of business Alexander plans on bringing in.
You know, we will turn up the music on, you know, on the weekends because more people come out on the weekends, you know. Does that make us a nightclub? No.
In weighing whether or not to block the transfer, the assembly is picking apart Alexander's 20-year business career in Anchorage. Recently, the Public Safety Committee gathered to hear more information on the issue, and assembly members asked Alexander questions about his plans for late-night security. But they also brought up civil court case findings that Alexander had let his workers' comp insurance lapse repeatedly over a period of 2 years. That ruling is under appeal, but in the meantime, Assemblymember Bill Evans says that an operator's business record is fair game for assessing a permit transfer.
And he was assessed a fine of over $1 million for those violations. There's a detailed report which shows a lot of disconcern and a lot of failure to report and failure to cooperate with the board. So that's been an issue that the assembly is going to at least consider in deciding whether he should be granted the liquor license.
Booze is big business in Anchorage, and operators pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to obtain permits from one another. The Alcoholic Beverage Control Board technically has authority over the transfers, but typically defers to decisions from local governing bodies. The thought being that those who live and work in a particular town or neighborhood know better what liquor may bring to the area. Assemblymember Evans says the legacy of Platinum Jack's casts a long shadow for some nearby residents.
This is a bit unusual. Most of these transfers go through usually without this kind of scrutiny. Part of the issue here is that a lot of the neighbors were really upset about it. They raised those concerns, and I think that cause the assembly to look at this one a little more closely.
The chorus of property owners opposing the transfer is small but vocal, and they insist you can't protect home and business values while serving booze until bar break next door. Chris Schutte directs the Anchorage Downtown Partnership, which is opposed to the transfer.
I think that given the neighborhood's previous experience, confidence in an incoming operator is really important. And without that confidence there, and without assurances from the operator, perhaps tied to the license transfer, the neighborhood will not feel comfortable with this operation coming in.
Schutte proposes conditions be attached to the permit, like an earlier closing time and set ratio of food to alcohol sales. Alexander admits that his business record is not squeaky clean, but insists that's not unusual when you grow over so long a career. And most of the faults brought up by the assembly had to do with a period of rapid expansion. Since then, he's taken on a director of operations to manage finances. But he thinks the degree of scrutiny he's under is exceptional and feels unfairly judged.
I haven't done anything yet. You know, I'm just operating. You know, yeah, give me a chance. So I just hope this whole thing goes away fairly quick so that it becomes old news.
The assembly is scheduled to vote on the transfer at its first meeting in February. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the new executive director of Catholic Social Services talks about the people she serves.
Every night, Brother Francis Shelter, especially at this time of the year, is full.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you're not covered by health insurance, you may be eligible for financial help with monthly premiums and out-of-pocket expenses. Open enrollment ends on February 15th. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Last year, 88% of Alaskans who enrolled received financial assistance. Compare plans and see if you qualify for financial assistance. Call 211 to get free local help. Visit getcoveredalaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by ASHNA, a partner of Get Covered Alaska.
High-intensity headlights are popular and getting more so, especially here in Alaska, during the long, dark winter months. They're called moose lights because they help drivers see farther down the road. But Alaska State Troopers say they can also blind oncoming motorists. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Ben Nix works at the Napa Auto Parts store in Delta Junction, and he says he likes the added visibility he gets with his Light Force 240 high-intensity discharge lights that he's got mounted on his pickup's roll bar.
Yeah, I mean, I have them just to see more moose and anything else that, you know, you might encounter while driving, and they do really great.
Nix says the bright lights also are popular among his customers.
You know, we do sell a lot of them. A lot of people like them.
But Dave Slater says those extremely bright headlights really bother him.
But these lights are so bright. I mean, they're even brighter than, you know, regular standard beam bulbs on high, and they're blinding.
That's what worries Sergeant Jess Carson with the Alaska State Troopers Fairbanks Bureau of Highway Patrol Office. Carson says troopers have been getting a half dozen or so complaints like Slater's annually over the past few years, but he says they really can't do much more than sympathize with him.
We just explain to them that we share their frustration. We understand that it is very difficult to see around them, that it limits your vision while you're passing them, when you're next to them, and then for a little ways after you pass them, it's almost the equivalent to somebody pointing a high output flashlight in your eyes. It takes a little while to adjust after that.
Carson says there are no state laws or regulations that set standards on those aftermarket lights and fixtures, nor any that authorize enforcement.
The current laws in Alaska don't have any statutes that would allow us to enforce it.
He says federal regulations set some standards, but they mainly govern the types of headlights that auto manufacturers install.
What happens is people add aftermarket lights to the vehicles, and that's where we're running into the problems.
Carson says the federal regs also apply to the colors of light emitted by aftermarket units, but only those that emit greenish or yellowish colors, not the bright bluish light that many complain of, but which the federal regs classify as white-ish.
When you see the blue lights out there, although our eye picks up some blue, it still falls in within the white spectrum.
Carson says headlight systems that manufacturers install in vehicles have been tested and certified as safest for all motorists. He says they provide enough light for drivers to see a safe distance ahead while still allowing those in the oncoming lane to preserve their night vision. He says that's the balance that the federal regs seek to maintain, the balance that's thrown out of whack by extremely bright headlights.
The light is designed for the maximum output for the individual behind the wheel. You have to run a happy medium there of your ability to see versus what you're causing to other vehicles and around you.
Carson says that's the basis of his counterarguments to those who say moose lights make driving safer, and that is those bright lights can blind the other drivers, causing them to hit the ditch or an oncoming vehicle.
Although you're able to see moose, you're able to see a little bit farther. You've now put a several-ton piece of metal flying at you at 55 miles an hour and ruin their ability to see their lane anymore.
Carson says unless and until motorists decide something needs to be done about extremely bright headlights and to get their legislators to pass laws to regulate them, troopers can't do much about them unless they happen to be nearby and see a motorist failing to dim them. Slater, who complained about the bright headlights in a letter to the editor of the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, says he's not arguing in support of any sort of legislation. He's just trying to point out the need for motorists to think of the other guy in the oncoming vehicle.
You know, I hate to have a new law imposed on people. I would rather it be something that people just do out of courtesy to their fellow man.
And on that point, both Carson and Nix, the auto parts store worker, agree. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
There is no longer an Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation office in Bethel. State officials closed the office just before the holidays, but the former sole employee of the office says the closure will lower the level of service to Southwest Alaska and could slow spill response time. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has more.
The state of Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation Office of Spill Prevention and Response in Bethel closed December 31st. Steve Russell is an environmental program manager with the Anchorage DEC. He says the decision was financial.
There certainly was financial considerations playing a role in the idea of not relocating another person back out to the Bethel office, and Bob's departure kind of sped that process.
Bob Carlson, the sole employee at the Bethel DEC office, retired just before the office closed. Russell says his office already responds to the Aleutians, Bristol Bay, Kodiak, and other communities off the road system, so adding the YK Delta isn't that big of a deal. He says spill prevention and response will now be handled out of Anchorage.
There are numerous flights a day to Bethel, we can get someone out there pretty quickly.
Carlson says shutting down the Bethel office is a mistake.
Well, I understand that the state is in a financial emergency, and we're going to have to do things differently. I'm hoping that the department will at least train someone or allow someone to become a specialist in these sorts of rural affairs. So even if they don't get out here frequently, they can deal intelligently with spills that happen in these small communities.
Closing the office, Carlson said, will result in a lower level of service for people in the region and a tilting in favor of industry.
The department, and particularly my program, has a diminished view of the importance of rural Alaska and Western Alaska in terms of needing to serve the communities out here on fairly small spills. They will undoubtedly handle that mostly by phone from Anchorage or the other cities.
And Carlson says that's not enough.
People, when they do have a spill, they don't know how to clean it up. Mostly they don't, and they need advice. And often they need hands-on assistance, you know, on-site assistance. And that's just not going to happen with the offices located in Anchorage.
Carlson had worked at the Bethel DEC office since 1995, shortly after it opened. Recently, he's played a key role in trying to clean up derelict and abandoned barges in the area and in pushing state officials to hold businesses responsible for the barges accountable. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, supporting the Clare House Replacement Project. There's more information online at cssalaska.org. If subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing are important to you, please consider applying for one of 35 seats open on your Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. The seats will be filled by rural Alaskans who are knowledgeable about fish and wildlife resources in their region. Apply by January 23, 2015. Information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence at fws.gov. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Quiet after the frenzy of the holidays is a welcome change for many Alaskans, but for those who live from paycheck to paycheck or are homeless, the quiet can mean less. Less public attention to donations of clothing, food, and money during the coldest part of the year. In December, Lisa Aquino took the helm as Executive Director for Catholic Social Services, the organization that runs Brother Francis Shelter, Clare House, and other assistance programs in Anchorage. Aquino grew up in Anchorage, in a family that spent lots of time helping out and donating to Brother Francis. Aquino says the needs of people at the shelter really haven't changed since then. A warm coat, food, and a safe place to sleep.
But I think there's been a real learning about how to transition folks from homelessness to the next step, to be in housing or to be employed or whatever that next, to be in services. So there's a lot of really smart people doing some wonderful things, and many of them are at the Brother Francis Shelter, and there's some really exciting new programs. So I think that has been a change in the approach, and it's exciting.
What about the attitudes of Anchorage residents? Do you see growing understanding of homelessness and compassion for those who are poor within the larger community, or do you see less of that now?
Well, I will say that I feel Anchorage is one of the most giving communities. I think Anchorage really reaches out and helps each other, and I have felt that personally again and again, and I've seen that happen again and again. So in terms of that, I think that continues. But I think that our community is changing, and I think there's new people, there's younger people, And there's new services and there's new things happening in terms of filling some of the needs. So I think there's new connections to be made, and I'm excited to do that and to be a part of that, to help make those connections.
What about the need itself? How well can Brother Francis handle the need in Anchorage? Are people being turned away because of overcrowding more or less than in past years? How would you gauge that now?
Well, I know that on any given night, between our two shelters, the Brother Francis Shelter and the Clare House, we're serving 450 men, women, and children. And that's a lot of people, and I know that in cold weather, when more people need to come in, more people need shelter, that we work with a lot of other agencies in town to have overflow services so that we can provide safe shelter to all the people that need it. And there's a great network of agencies and organizations and faith communities that come together to provide that. And they've really been able to fulfill the need in many, many ways. But that being said, of course, it's very sad that there is such a great need.
You worked in public health in Alaska for a number of years before taking this position. How will that background help you shape the future of Catholic social services?
In public health, so much of what we do is about thinking broadly about health issues. It's about bringing different disciplines to the table to approach large health issues. And I think that in terms of the issues that we're facing with Catholic social services, the issues facing the poorest and most in need in our community, those are also large, complex issues. And so I think my background in public health around approaching large, complex issues is going to be really helpful. And I also just want to say, I mean, I think that these issues of housing and food security, these are health issues. This is, if the health is such a broad term, and this is public health in my definition. And so I really feel that my background makes me perfectly suited to do this job.
What do you want Anchorage residents to know about the work that goes on at Brother Francis, and what do you want them to do?
I want the people in Anchorage to know that every night their Brother Francis shelter, especially at this time of the year, is full. Every night there's a line of people that are looking for safe and secure housing, somewhere to stay tonight. And that there's a lot that people in this community can do. They certainly can support that by donating to Catholic Social Services on our website, but they can also support by coming down and volunteering, because it's a really important place in our community. And one that I feel like we should all take some ownership of.
Lisa Aquino is the new Executive Director of Catholic Social Services in Anchorage. Brett Wood Higman and Aaron McKittrick are well known in Alaska for taking daring expeditions with their two young children, Katmai and Latuya. Now a Homer filmmaker is producing a documentary about one of their most adventurous trips around Cook Inlet. KBBI's Shady Grove Oliver has more.
Erin McKittrick is a born storyteller, and her stories are pretty exciting.
Well, to tell the story of the movie, I first have to tell my part in it, which was basically walking around Cook Inlet. So spring and summer of 2013, my husband and I and our two kids, who were 4 and 2 years old at the time, set out from basically the mouth of Cook Inlet, a little beyond Nanwalek Village, to walk and paddle pack rafts all the way around. And we did that.
That 3.5 month, 800 mile journey is the focal point of the film, which is being made by Bjorn Olsen.
Hagen Aaron shot footage and a lot of stills, and Aaron's a fastidious journal keeper. So I have been entrusted with that material to turn that into a project.
The project is headed by Ground Truth Trekking, Higgin Aaron's nonprofit that Olsen is a part of. It's being funded through Kickstarter.
I would like to go back and basically retrace their route and interact with the people that they interacted with.
Those interactions center on a single question that Higg explains in the Kickstarter preview video.
We asked pretty much anyone we met what they thought were the big changes in store for Alaska in the next 50 years or so, next couple generations.
Aaron says they got incredibly diverse answers. Some people talked politics, others told stories about their children and education, some talked about preserving traditional ways and the environment. She says it was a reflection of Cook Inlet in its entirety.
You know, almost every kind of community and place you might find in Alaska, from the extremely wild, from, you know, the parks that people rarely go to Anchorage, and everywhere in between, fish camps and little villages.
That sentiment about this place in Alaska, this central nervous system of fishing, mining, oil and gas, metropolitan and rural lifestyles, gave the film and the journey its title. Here are Aaron and Higg in the video.
We called the trip The Heart of Alaska, and the place is really kind of encompasses everything you find in this state.
A huge piece of any trip is the people you meet along the way.
Those people and their ideas will be central to the film. Olson hopes it will portray Alaska's communities in a thoughtful and even-handed way.
I personally feel that we get bombarded with one side versus another on a lot of these issues. Either you're for this or you're against this. And quite often, the situations and the issues are much more complex than just black and white.
After all, Aaron says, Heart of Alaska is about the nuance, the in-between, the journey.
I don't think the story is just about us, but, you know, we're the glue. We tie it together with footsteps, I guess. And that's, you know, that it is a story of this family going out to learn things, but it's also a story of the things we learned.
And she hopes those stories will motivate other Alaskans to look to the future and question what it holds. In Homer, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Tim Ellis in Delta, Daisha Eaton in Bethel, and Shady Grove Oliver in Homer. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the 2015 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Enroll now in the Health Insurance Marketplace. Sign up at healthcare.gov. Open enrollment ends February 15th. Depending on your income, age, and family size, you may be eligible for discounts that may lower your monthly costs and out-of-pocket expenses. Pick a plan that is right for you and your family. Call 211 for free individual assistance about the health insurance marketplace. Visit getcoveredalaska.org for more information. This message sponsored by Ashna, a partner of Get Covered Alaska. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.